The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
I am so excited about the podcast. I know I say that a lot, but I've been wanting to have Rick Steves as a guest for a very, very long time. I use his guidebooks when I travel, and I always find incredible things. I usually end up reading them from cover to cover when I'm in a foreign city. And he's got a book also called Rick Steves' Travel as a Political Act that I would highly recommend. It's very different from the guidebooks, but it's very eye-opening. It came out in 2014, and we're going to talk to Rick Steves about how he got started as a travel writer and travel maven, and he's going to be joining us in just a few minutes. And also on the podcast today, my dad is joining us again. He just got back from Burma, and the flight back was incredible. I've never heard this happen to somebody on a flight back from a foreign country, and he's going to join us to kind of share a quick tale about something very unusual that went on his trip from Burma all the way back to Orlando, Florida, where he started. But joining us first is one of the most noted travel writers in the world, I should say, not just in the United States, but in the world, Rick Steves. You've probably used one of his guidebooks on a trip across the ocean from a time or two. And next to my parents, who retired early to travel, Rick, you're probably one of my favorite travel storytellers.
I've learned in my travels that age only matters if you're a cheese, and it's never too late to have a happy childhood when it comes to travel.
You know, my wife and I, my daughter, we went to Barcelona and Madrid with my parents, and it's the first time I've really actually traveled with my parents in a scenario like that. And I highly recommend to anybody, travel with your parents as an adult. It is so much fun.
Well, that sounds great. I'm also very pleased when I see parents traveling, taking their kids to Europe and exposing them to Europe. My parents dragged me to Europe when I was 14 years old, and I remember thinking it was a stupid idea. But I got over there, and it really changed my life. It's just so exciting for us Americans to realize, hey, there's 96% of humanity outside of our borders, and it's great to get out there and meet them in person.
It definitely is. But I think you'll agree, for a lot of people, they don't get to travel. One, you know, we're so separated from Europe and the rest of the world. And, you know, in Europe, if you want to travel to another country, it doesn't take that much effort compared to what it takes for an American. I think that's one of the reasons we're not a very well-traveled country.
Well, a lot of Americans will go back to their same little, you know, Orlando or Waikiki destination for all their lives. And frankly, I think, you know, those are great places, but they're after a few visits, why don't you try Portugal or Israel or Norway or Ireland or something different? You know, you can get on a plane here and in 12 hours be in Israel.
Yeah.
And you go to Jerusalem, and then for half an hour from Jerusalem, you can be in the West Bank in Bethlehem. I was just there, had a great time. I just jumped off of a cruise ship in St. Petersburg to get to know a little bit about Russia. Just a wonderful time in the Italian Riviera and the great cities of Europe, London, Paris, Rome, Istanbul. There's so much to experience, and I find, and I've been spending 4 months a year for the last 30 years over there researching my guidebooks and leading the tours that we take around and producing our TV shows. And what's amazing to me, or impressive to me, Mark, is that you can never exhaust Europe of what it has to offer.
Oh,
I was just
10
days in Poland, and it was all new to me. You know, Gdansk and Warsaw and Krakow, there is so much to offer over there, and it's surprisingly affordable if you know how, and it's certainly friendly if you're just a good traveler.
You know, so often when I leave, I have a list of, like, so many things I want to come back and do, and I feel like I just opened a door and peeked in on my, you know, trip over there.
I'm the same way. I leave with a certain list of things I want to do. I travel for 2 months at a time, twice a year, and every time I come home with a longer list of things I want to do, because I keep learning when I'm over there that there's more and more to see. We've made well over 100 TV shows for KERA and for public television, and you know, I've just finished my eighth series. It's debuting this season right now, 12 new shows, and I'm already chomping at the bit to go back and do 12 more shows in the next 2 years. There's just a lot of exciting things to experience. And I think it's important for Americans to work to get out of their comfort zone a little bit. You know, when you're in Ireland, go to Northern Ireland. When you're in Vienna, go over to Budapest. When you're in Greece, take the boat to Turkey. When you're in Israel, get into the West Bank. You know, I was in this last year, I've been in Egypt. I've been in Palestine, I've been in Russia and all over Turkey. Some of my loved ones will say, Rick, don't you think that, do you feel like you're safe? And, you know, I say, as long as I'm not traveling through Chicago, I think I'll be just fine.
How did the Rick Steves empire start? I mean, you've got books, you've got TV series. How did that begin? I've always wondered that.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been doing the same thing since I was a college kid. I used to be a piano teacher, and my kids wouldn't practice in the summer, so I said, I'm not going to push this. I'm going to Europe to travel, and I'll see you in September. I was traveling on a shoestring and learning from my experience, and then I realized, boy, other people were making the same mistakes I was making. I thought if I could package the lessons I learned from my experience into a talk or a guidebook, other people could learn from my mistakes rather than their own and travel smoother, smarter, and less expensively. So that's been my mission, to package the lessons from my experience and design them so others can learn from me and travel better. I've been doing that for 30 years. I've got a staff of 100 people now up in Seattle that work with me, and I've got 100 guides in Europe that take our tours around Europe, and I'm doing essentially the same thing, but I've got much more reach because of the amazing technology we have as travel writers and tour organizers these days. We produce a radio show that airs on 250 stations every week for an hour, and my TV series airs all over the United States, and we've got guidebooks for every country in Europe, and the big part of our business is we take tours around. This year we took about 600 tours around Europe. There was about 15,000 people, and for me, that's so fun to organize the time, understanding that Americans have the shortest vacations in the rich
yes,
world.
Yes, yes, we
and,
do.
We just got to cut through the superlatives and know how to use our time smartly, because time is a precious resource when we're traveling.
I always am amazed when Europeans go, you're here for how long? That's it? Like, we have all of August off.
I know it. Americans, because I spend a lot of time helping people with their itineraries, and I go, you want to do what in 2 days? You know, and it's just, you got to slow down, and you got to, you know, we try to do it all in 10 days, and I think you got to call in well and stay another week over there. It's good to have a couple of weeks when you go to Europe. But it's really important, Mark, for travelers to know how to use the public transportation smartly, to understand the value of hiring local guides over there. I think a very interesting splurge is to hire a local guide. When you look at my TV show, you see all these sidekicks of mine, these friends that I travel with who are my local experts. They're just hardworking independent tour guides, and they're looking to fill up their schedule. That's their livelihood, and anybody can hire them just like I do. For 3 hours, they meet you at your hotel and take you on a walk. And if you're going to a city like Prague or Istanbul or Krakow or Helsinki, and you want to have some sort of introduction by an expert and basically just a local friend, hire a guide. They'll meet you at the hotel. They'll take you on a three-hour walk. It'll cost you, you know, a couple hundred dollars, maybe in a more expensive country, and $100 in a cheaper country. The good news is a private guide costs less where they're worth more. The most expensive countries, you don't really need a private guide. You're going to Edinburgh, you know, you can do just fine. But if you go to the more far-reaching corners, let's say you're going to Bulgaria or Morocco or Turkey or Poland, that's where you'll want to have a local guide to be your sidekick, and they'll get you into homes, and they'll be able to give you all sorts of taste treats, and they'll explain the history and the culture behind what you're seeing. I was just in Krakow, and you drop into a little bar, and you have a impromptu vodka tasting, you know, and you have a local expert that can explain to you the whole vodka culture. There's so many layers of Europe that you can experience. One of my themes lately, and that's the title of our latest newsletter, is the best experiences. A lot of Americans have seen the famous things, the Eiffel Tower, the Leaning Tower, the Beef Eaters. Now you got to go over there and have experiences. And there are ways to experience Europe, to taste it, to smell it, to feel it. And that's really what I think is distinguishes a good trip. How many people do you meet? How many experiences do you have? How do you get out of your comfort zone and challenge truths that you were raised thinking were self-evident and God-given, and come home with what I think is the very best souvenir, and that's a broader perspective?
You know, I have to mention my very first Rick Steves book I bought was actually was a gift. It was Europe Through the Back Door, which is a great starter. But I have to tell you an experience I had. I don't think it's in any of your current chapters, but there was a place in Italy. I'm not going to mention it right now. You can mention it if you want, because I think you know what it is. And it was, as soon as I read that chapter, it's like, I've got to go there. I have got to see this place. And I went to that place, and it was overrun by everybody who had your book. And I thought, I think, do you find that, does that happen often, that sometimes?
Are you talking about the Cinque Terre?
Exactly.
Well, there's a handful of places where I've really had an impact where, you know, they're undiscovered. Those are five little traffic-free ports on the Italian Riviera that you can't get to by car in a lot of cases. Got to take the train in, and they're so magical. And when I discovered them, Mark, they were humble little places with no fancy restaurants and no real hotels. Now, a generation later, There's a lot of tourism there. There's plenty of beautiful restaurants and wonderful boutique hotels and great hikes. It's become a national park, actually. And, of course, it's more affluent, and it's not as edgy and backwater as it used to be. But everybody I meet there was having a good time. Did you find the tourists there were having a good time?
I had a good time, but it was very difficult to find a place to stay because there were, like I said, so many people went there. And we all had your book.
Yeah, well, a lot of people wish I would just kind of keep it a secret and tell them directly. But
I know. That's what I felt like. I said, I wish. You know, it's a double-edged sword. You want to share those places, especially something like that. But as soon as you share it, then, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's an extreme case, Mark. And I spend 120 days a year in Europe. I've done that for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm in the Mediterranean in April and May. I go home in June. And then July and August, I'm researching north of the Alps. My job is to find undiscovered places and then ruin them. That's a little bit overstating it. But find these undiscovered places and then share them with my American travelers through my guidebooks and with our tours and with my TV show. And there's a few places like the Cinque Terre where it has become really, really quite crowded. But there are a lot of other places. And if you read my book carefully and you want to avoid the touristed places, you just dig a little deeper into the listings. There's a lot of places that I rave about, and I'm hardly making a noticeable impact. It's interesting to me that it is, you know, Americans like to go to the same places, mm-hmm. but if you can kind of do something a little alternative, you really will find yourself all alone with that culture. And there's plenty of ways to do that. And you can go to the north of Portugal, or you can go to the villages in Andalusia. You can go all over the Peloponnesian Peninsula. You know, you can go to the central part of Turkey. You can go to Poland, like I just was last month, and you'll find yourself that you're the only American there, and you get a very warm welcome.
Oh gosh, I find that so true. I've stumbled upon places that are tourist places, but they're tourist mm-hmm. places for people who live in that country or other Europeans. Yeah. And yeah, I'm the only American there, and what a great experience it always turns out to be, because the people are in the hospitality business, number one.
One thing, Mark, that's really important is to recognize that a place could be very crowded during the middle of the day, but if you get up early or stay out late, it's all yours. I mean, you know, everybody knows Rothenburg an der Tauber, the best medieval walled town in Germany, feudal town, you know. And if you get up early and walk around or go out after dinner and walk around the wall, it's just you and the floodlit ramparts and memories of the Middle Ages. But if you're there in the middle of the day, it's just a traffic jam of tourists shopping as all the tour groups are in town. So, one of my most favorite sites in all of Europe is the parking lot, believe it or not, for the tour buses in Rothenburg. Because for 20 years, when I was driving in there with my tour bus, I was nervous that there'd even be a place to park the bus in the tour bus parking lot outside the wall. And at night, if I forget something and I have to go back out to my bus, there it is, my bus all alone in the floodlit parking lot, indicating there's just one tour group in town tonight, and it's ours. And that's sort of a message that if you can get away from the crowds, when you're in Rome, go to the Pantheon early or late, and you will literally be the only person in the Pantheon. And to me, that's a magical experience. I like to be up on the Acropolis in Athens when the guards are blowing the whistle and shooing everybody off the hill. If I'm just the last person at the Parthenon in the Acropolis, that's one of those beautiful moments that shine on and on in your memory long after the trip is over.
The Acropolis, a great memory for me, too, because that's one of the places my parents dragged me to when I was in the third grade. And I look back at that now and realize what just a tremendous experience that was for me. Rick, I know your time is limited. I'm so appreciative of you spending a few moments with our Travel with Hawkeye audience. Continued success. Thank you for all the places you've helped me discover with your guidebooks. I really do appreciate it as a guest. And if you ever get tired of doing the radio show, let me know. I'd love to take over for you.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Travel expert Rick Steves joining us on the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. I wish we had more time. I'm so thankful for the time that we did have. I would like to once again highly recommend the book Travel as a Political Act. It's a very different book from Rick Steves, but it's very eye-opening and kind of gives the behind-scenes look at a lot of different countries. I really enjoyed the book Travel as a Political Act. It came out a few years ago, and it's a book that you can read differently from the guidebooks, and just highly recommend that. All right, on the phone with us now, I wanted my dad to join us on the podcast because he just got back from Burma and had an incredible story to tell about the flight back. I've never heard anything like this before. So first of all, Dad, welcome to the podcast. How was Burma?
It was fantastic. It's now Miramar, by the way.
Oh, okay. I stand corrected. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a great trip. It was run by Vantage, which Vantage has a river cruise. It was three nights in a hotel and then nine nights on a river cruise. It was really good.
The interesting thing, though, the reason I asked you here is you're telling me about your flight back, and this has nothing to do with the tour group, but this is really to do with the airlines.
Right. Well, no. It was the tour that set the trip.
Okay,
that
okay.
took care of the transportation, the air.
Okay, well, tell everybody what was so unusual about the trip.
Well, it was the longest. It was. I could not believe when I first got notified. You know, they send you your itinerary.
Yes.
And I read it and I said, "Mike, this is just impossible." So I said, "We're making too many stops." So I called right away to Vantage because that's who set it up, and they said, "Well, that's the way it is. Unless you want to upgrade to business class, which was I think at that time about 5,000."
Yeah.
I said, no, that's okay. I guess we'll stick with what we got then. I guess so. And, you know, it was always lingering that, my goodness, we're going to have so many stops. So when our last stop in the river cruise was in Mandalay, and that's where we started to leave from.
Okay.
We go to the airport to Mandalay, and we had one suitcase that we...
First of all, Dad, tell people how many stops and what all the stops were.
Okay. Well, it went from Mandalay to Bangkok. Then Bangkok to Hong Kong.
Okay.
Then Hong Kong to LAX.
Okay.
Then LAX to Dallas.
Okay.
And then Dallas to Orlando.
Okay. And then a long drive home after that.
And then a long drive home from there.
Okay. So that's five stops.
Yes. On your back deck, though, you know, Mandalay starts it out, you know.
Yes.
Because that's where you started from. Well, when we got to Mandalay, you know, I put my checked luggage on the scale. We had a carry-on that we carried on, and I gave her my itinerary and our passports. And so she looked at the itinerary first before she started. I mean, looked at our passports, and then she went right to the itinerary and sort of looked at it with, I don't know, just wasn't, you know, looked like she was concerned. And she mentioned there's a lot of stops. And I said, yeah, I know that. And I said, and we would like our luggage to go directly to Orlando. And she says, yes, okay. So she started typing in the stops for the baggage tag, and you could readily see that it wasn't working. I mean, she was very frustrated that it wasn't working. She said, I said, is there a problem? She said, well, I'm going to have to call the supervisor. So the supervisor comes over, and one look at the itinerary, and she says, you got too many stops. And I thought she was just joking or being sarcastic or whatever.
Yes, yes, of course.
Yeah, at first. And I said, yeah, I know we do. I said, but that was the best they could do for us. She says, no, you have too many stops. I says, I know. She says, no, the baggage tag doesn't go that long. We can't make a baggage tag that long for you. I says, really? She says, yeah. And I says, so what does that mean? She says, well, you're going to have to get your luggage somewhere along the line and, you know, start the trip again. I said, well, where are we going to do that? Well, you know, and I'm sure you know, Mark, when you come in from a foreign country, you're and you stop in L.A.
Yes, yeah.
You have to go what they call touch your luggage.
Yes.
You get your bag.
Yeah.
And then you only walk maybe, I'm going to say, 10, 20 yards.
And recheck it.
Yeah, and you recheck it. You just sort of scoot it up there and they take it and look at it and put it around a thing and off you go. I mean, it takes, once you get your bag, it's truly 15 minutes is maximum, you know, because you're only walking. Well, not so when your luggage now reads last stop LAX.
Uh-huh.
So now we have to get our luggage and we go outside the airport, the terminal, down to the new terminal 4, whatever it is, upstairs to American Airlines. And I go to get in line and I said, I'm here. I got to turn my luggage in. And she said, you know, that's going to cost you. And I said, no, it shouldn't. She said, well, you have two tickets, don't you? And I said, no. I told her we were coming in from Miramar.
Uh-huh.
She says, well, the reason you're here, you have two tickets, two separate tickets. I said, no, I don't have two separate tickets. I have one ticket. And I said, you know, maybe I shouldn't be in this line. And so I got out of that line and I went down to customer service.
Because they want to charge you again also. They're going to charge you the $25 per bag fee.
Yeah, because, see, you're starting – your luggage now reads – your luggage doesn't read anything. It's now you're a new customer.
Yeah, yeah. This is
you're
hilarious.
In Los Angeles. Yeah, you're in Los Angeles going to Orlando. They could care less that you came from someplace because you have your luggage in your hand. So then I went to customer service and stood in that line for a while. And then when I got to customer service – I explained my story, and she says, oh, okay, I understand. And I, sure, we only had one ticket. You know, we didn't have two tickets. It was one complete ticket. So she sent it on to Orlando, you know, and didn't charge us again.
Still, though, hilarious. Five stops and having to get your bags, go out back in, out of the terminal, back into another terminal to check your bags. Yeah. That's hilarious.
It was. It was unbelievable. You know, we belong to ITN. It's a magazine about what's going on overseas and all. You know, got a lot to travel. But they have a little column that talks about, tell us your most humorous story. So I figured, hey, and you win a year's subscription if they publish it. So I wrote it. And I get an answer back saying, this did not tickle our funny bones. So I wrote him back and I said, everybody else laughed when I told
them. Well, it tickled the funny bone of us here at the podcast. So we appreciate you sharing that with us, Dad. What's up next? Yeah. Do you guys know where you're going? Next, I guess, on your schedules, you're coming here at Christmas, going to spend time with us. So we're excited about
Christmas,
that.
Yeah. And then we're probably going to go back to Bali and stop in Korea either before or after. I have a friend, a Korean officer that I've known since 1976. It was unbelievable how our careers crossed at different Korean bases that I was TDY at. And so we're going to try to stop and see him on our way back from Bali or going to Bali. So that's our next trip, probably March, April timeframe.
Well, good deal. Good deal. We'll see you at Christmas time, Dad.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. That's my dad. You know, you're never too big to have your dad on the podcast. I want to thank Rick Steves also for joining us today. You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. Don't forget to join us also on our social media accounts, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Hawkeye on Air. And when we go on trips, we always like to share our trips. We just got back from New York City, so you can find some photos there, especially on our Instagram stories. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. The world is out there. Your adventure awaits.